Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 149, The Rest of the Cosmic Ray Story. It's always difficult working with podcast episodes that come in two parts when you have a story that comes in three parts. So if continuity is your thing, you could go back and get the first part of the story from Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 148, or otherwise just settle in for the ongoing story. Dear Cheap Astronomy, Just How Dangerous Are Cosmic Rays, Part 2. In the previous episode, we covered the dangers of particle radiation in space travel. To recap, sure, electromagnetic radiation can kill you, but if you're outside of Mercury's orbit, it's unlikely the Sun's electromagnetic radiation will kill you, as long as you have adequate radiators to lose any heat that you gain. Also, a modicum of shielding should be more than adequate to reflect any shortwave radiation, remembering that Earth's flimsy ozone layer is entirely adequate to shield our whole planet from wavelengths shorter than ultraviolet. The real danger is particle radiation, a subatomic particle like a proton that's been accelerated up to close to the speed of light is not going to bounce off your hull. It will hit and essentially explode, fragmenting itself and whatever it hits into subatomic shrapnel that continues forward to collide with the next layer of material, and so on, until some of that secondary radiation eventually reaches the crew. All this happens at the subatomic level, so the astronauts would be oblivious to it in the absence of radiation detectors. They might die from cancer years later, but could experience more immediate problems if that radiation wipes out their bone marrow, leading to anemia and immunosuppression after a few days. They would likely recover from that, but having the whole crew incapacitated for days or weeks while they're flying a spacecraft is not a good scenario. In the context of space, we call particle radiation cosmic rays. Within the solar system, most cosmic rays are produced from the Sun. The Sun has a constant output of particle radiation called the solar wind, but there are also occasional accelerated outbursts of particles called solar particle events, as well as much larger scale coronal mass ejections. All of our Apollo lunar astronauts flew outside the Earth's magnetosphere for several days with no ill effects. But had one of their flights coincided with a large coronal mass ejection moving in their direction, NASA might have aborted a landing or otherwise shortened the mission with the aim of getting the astronauts home quickly, since such radiation exposure wouldn't kill them outright, but might have brought on incapacitating radiation sickness within a matter of days. Of course, on a mission to Mars, there are no such mission abort options. So, prevention through shielding is a necessity. Apparently, the best shielding against cosmic rays, which are predominantly high-energy protons, is a material rich in hydrogen, which is essentially protons. So, water is good shielding, as are hydrocarbons, such as plastics, and also, human waste. So we could route the plumbing through one part of the hull and store the in another part of the hull. However, current thinking for lunar missions is much simpler. Once a coronal mass ejection is known to be approaching, the crew will grab loose storage bags and other containers and build a makeshift igloo around themselves for temporary protection until that burst of particle radiation has passed. However, there are also more deadly cosmic rays out there. Galactic cosmic rays come from outside the solar system and with enough kinetic energy to punch straight through the heliopause against the outward push of the solar wind. There are also even more powerful extragalactic cosmic rays that first punch through the galaxy's interstellar wind and then the sun's heliopause as well. The greater danger that these cosmic rays pose now has us planning to fly humans to Mars during a solar maxima. That is, we'd rather deal with the worst particle radiation the sun can offer in the hope that that extra outward push of solar wind during a solar maxima might take some of the energy out of the incoming galactic and extragalactic cosmic ray particles. As to the origin of these astonishingly high-energy cosmic rays and how we might hope to protect astronauts from them, where some water, poo, and a few storage bags just won't cut it, will all be a matter for Part 3.
This is the middle bit.
If you did just tune in for Parts 2 and 3, you can be reassured you are getting some of the best bits here, or at least the most deadly bits. And just to clarify, what's next is the second part of this episode, although it's the third part of the cosmic ray story, and there is no further mention of poo. Dear Cheap Astronomy, Just How Dangerous Are Cosmic Rays, Part 3. As we discussed in Parts 1 and 2, when people talk about needing to protect astronauts from radiation, what they're talking about is particle rather than electromagnetic radiation. Particle radiation from the sun, particularly from an energetic outburst like a coronal mass ejection, is dangerous but also manageable on short trips, say to the moon and back. It's more of a concern on longer trips, since the pathology caused by radiation is mostly determined by cumulative dose. So, one or two Apollo missions to the moon didn't have an effect on cancer incidence amongst the lunar astronauts, but 10 or 20 missions might have. That's partly because of the increased likelihood of encountering something like a coronal mass ejection, but it also just arises from longer exposure to the background radiation of the solar wind. But, as we mentioned in Part 2, there are some much deadlier cosmic rays out there, the galactic and extragalactic ones. We don't know for sure that a lunar mission crew never came into contact with one of these, but they are the ones we're particularly worried about in the context of a Mars mission. Again, an encounter with one might not kill you, but an encounter with 10 might. We've known about cosmic ray particles since the early 1900s, when we started detecting their collisions with Earth's upper atmosphere. In 1991, a particularly high-energy cosmic ray particle collision was observed, thereafter called the Oh My God particle, where the kinetic energy it imparted to a subsequent air shower of subatomic shrapnel was equivalent to being hit by a baseball at 100 kilometers an hour or a bowling ball dropped from shoulder height. So, next time you hear that experiments like the Large Hadron Collider could destroy the world or even the universe, remember that there are vastly more energetic particle collisions taking place right over our heads, as they have been for billions of years now. Indeed, such collisions are commonplace across the universe. But anyway, a collision with such a high-energy particle is still a subatomic event, so it's not going to punch a hole in your spaceship, but it would almost certainly send a wave of secondary particles right through the hull to irradiate the crew. The faster the primary particle is moving prior to impact, the more kinetic energy it contributes to all the secondary particle radiation that's produced. Cosmic ray particles from the sun, thrown outwards by intense solar magnetic turbulence, can move close to the speed of light, say around 99.9% of the speed of light. Then there are rarer mid-range energy particles that might be thrown out by sources elsewhere in the galaxy, such as supernovae or neutron star mergers, events that are routinely accompanied by a gamma ray burst, but also by a burst of outflung particles that might be moving at 99.999% of the speed of light, with those extra 0.9s representing a lot of extra kinetic energy. And then there's the even rarer, ultra-high-energy cosmic ray particles, like the 1991 Oh My God particle, which would be moving at 99.999999% of the speed of light. Although these ultra-high-energy particles do seem to be in a class of their own, it's not yet settled whether they are all extragalactic. One possible source is the active galactic nuclei of distant galaxies that are pumping out jets of high-energy particles from their central supermassive black holes, but it might also be the case that ultra-high-energy particles could be coming from somewhere inside our galaxy, perhaps from a particularly energetic collision of two accreting black holes or something similarly cataclysmic. High and ultra-high-energy cosmic ray particles represent a rare but more lethal hazard to deep space astronauts, where the longer the mission, the more likely you are to encounter them. Protection from these very high-energy particles on a long-duration mission to Mars may require some fairly high-tech solutions. A spacecraft hull with multiple layers of varying materials, perhaps including Kevlar and polyethylene, with those layers separated by air gaps, might work. NASA has also investigated materials like hydrogenated boron nitride nanotubes as hull material, but also woven into a fabric for spacesuits. We may even consider active shielding in the form of a locally generated magnetic field around a spacecraft. The power requirements for this look prohibitive unless you are flying with a nuclear reactor, but that may well be what we end up doing, whereby future commanders might find themselves saying, "Shields up."
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. Not only can cosmic rays kill you, they can create real challenges for podcast episode scheduling. Once again, we're left wondering if we could have done better with more Patreon donations. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy. If you've got a space science question, or you just wanted to hydrogenate some boron nitride nanotubes, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll weave that in for you. Thanks for listening. Steve Nerlich, Cheap Astronomy.